say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular.
What in the name of Crom is a Stafford Murgatroyd Spectacular?
I think you mean the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular. And I'm actually glad you asked for one. See, Stafford Murgatroyd won a contest a while ago, and his request was for an episode. And he wanted it to be anything on New Zealand, where he is originally from. He said, just name it the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular. So we're naming this episode just that, the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular.
I feel like the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular is going to be a great episode.
Me too. I have been looking forward to the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular for weeks.
What the fuck? And Shithead knew about this also and I didn't. And why the hell do you keep saying Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular over and over? And now I am doing it. I hate you all.
Just as long as you don't hate the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular.
Hear, hear. So we are broadcasting the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular from the lower fourth dimension, also known as Chicago, with a layover in parts unknown, snowy Colorado. I'm David Flores, Brent Hand.
Nope.
The bots are here because God hates us all.
Forget the lower fourth. Forget Colorado, all that stuff, though, because like we said before, we are headed to the land of the long white cloud.
Aotearoa.
A.K.A. Middle Earth. A.K.A. the island of Kiwis, if you will. Anew, a Zealand. Yeah, that's right.
Fuck the old Zealand.
Out with it. Even old New Zealand was... No, wait, no. Now, not just any Kiwi story, all right? It's UFOs again this week, because this is Hysteria 51. We got to get back to our roots. The roots of the Kiwi
in
tree.
In the sky.
Yep, in the far-off land of New Zealand's South Island. Kaikoura, I believe I'm saying that right. I even listened to, like... the pronunciation on Google and then the local people saying it, it didn't sound the same. So we're just rolling with it there.
You're going with Kaikoura?
Yeah, Kaikoura is what I'm saying. You can call it whatever your little heart desires, sir. I guess we're not saying Kaikoura exactly, but the sky is above it. And the name, the media gave this event is, wait for it, the Kaikoura Lights. So super original.
Whoa.
I know. Yeah. But hey, this was the late 70s and Australia, New Zealand, and that part of the world were in the throes of UFO fever, so you had to name stuff quick so you don't get to be sued. They're all named that way, most of them. I mean, this is no – I mean, I don't want to split any hairs here, but this is no Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular. This is just the Kaikoura Lights, so, you know.
Ease up on the – hit the brakes. I've been to New Zealand, loved it, absolutely
really?
Gorgeous
yeah.
country. And Kaikoura, Christchurch, pretty much the eastern edge of the South Island, all the way down to Dunedin. But that was not where we went. We went west.
Yeah.
On that island. So I'm not familiar with this section of stuff, but
that's cool though. I mean, at least you've been there. That's really cool. I got a buddy from high school who's living there now. He's in the army and he does research in Antarctica. But he lives in New Zealand. What a tough gig for like a few days a month. He has to be in Antarctica and then he lives in New Zealand paradise for the rest of the year. So
should I join the army?
I know, right?
Wow.
So shout out to Yuri out there in the down under areas. But yeah, we're dealing this week with a series of UFO sightings that occurred in December in the year of our Lord, 1978. And I want to point out that is 1 year. Well, just less than 1 year. Prior to one of the most significant achievements and moments in human history.
The cold fusion that created Brent Hand.
I was birthed into this world through a scientific experiment called love. Anyway, So like we said, it was in the skies above the Kakura mountain ranges in the northwest, northeast, that is, of New Zealand's South Island. We said that. But the first sightings were made on December 21st when the crew of a Safe Air LTD cargo aircraft began observing a series of strange lights around their plane.
Then they had to change their name.
The what the shit air LTD. What the fuck is that? For all you plane lovers out there, they were flying an Armstrong Whitworth AW660 Argosy aircraft, famous for having one of the longest names
in the That's right. World. Check that one off your bingo cards, assholes.
Man. These lights were reported to have tracked along with the aircraft for several minutes before disappearing and then reappearing elsewhere, as those weird lights in the sky are one to do. This UFO, or I guess I should say UAP nowadays.
Get it right.
Yeah. Was said to be very large, and they described it as bigger than a house. Uh-oh. For those keeping tabs at home. Travis, yours was bigger than that, right?
You know, this thing was so huge. It was, you know, bigger than a Walmart.
Noted. Whoa. Ooh, yeah. It did have five white flashing lights, they said, that were visible on the craft. Is it weird to you, David, that these craft have lights? Like, they're from another planet, but let's have flashing lights for safety? Or do you look at that and, like, that's part of their propulsion we don't understand? Or where does your head go?
I think that's a very good point. If they're interstellar and stuff, there's a lot of assumptions that I could make about that kind of civilization where they would have some way to measure their environment from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do need light. Maybe we all need lights to see what's going on outside of our respective crafts. I don't know. But for propulsion, they don't seem... I mean, what do I know? But would pulsing lights the more I think about it, the more I'm like, well,
your
maybe,
brain goes,
maybe pulsing lights is the way they get around. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
But no, I think that's a fair question to ask.
He thinks we use pulsing lights. He probably doesn't even know how to use the three seashells. I was on Etsy the other day, and I saw they were 3D printing little trays to go above your toilet paper to put three seashells on. And it's very hard for me to not order one. And I know that Why Lisa not? Will have no idea what it is. And I just want to then be like, you don't even know how to use the three seashells?
That's so amazing that has stuck around.
Just of everything they could have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that movie, not critically well received.
No.
But
no.
The three seashells, that is meme worthy, even in 2023.
Right. Back to this. So here's another cool part. Some of the witnesses say they could see some little discs drop from the UFO and then disappear.
Were they gelatinous blobs to spread disease?
Doubtful. Maybe drones, maybe something else.
Did you taste them or are you just guessing?
You got me there. I am just guessing. I know you're hoping for more blobs.
For a taste.
We don't have enough blob stories on this show.
I mean, that anybody could say that, Brent.
That is
anybody
true.
Anybody in the world. I just, it sounds like they're just intergalactic litter bugs.
Yeah, they're just
like, take your fucking lights with you.
Put
them in the light bin.
Yeah, don't you
I don't know why. I feel like I'm very foul mouthed today.
They were right? dropping their Kim on. Toilet over New Zealand and just boot scooting on out of there.
They poop light.
Yeah.
maybe silicon based life.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I heard it on Star Trek.
The pilots described some of these lights to be, like we established with the help of Mr. Walton, the size of a house and others small but flashing brilliantly. And also, this is important part of the account. These objects, or at least something in the area, appeared on the air traffic controller radar in Wellington and also on the aircraft's onboard radar. Not something you get all that often, which is corroborating evidence that something was awry. And then get this shit. Just a few days later, on December 30th of 78, television crew from Australia recorded background film for a network show of interviews about the sightings. They wanted to get up, and what they kind of said they wanted to do was, let's jump on this plane, because they do the plane delivers newspapers, all right? They do this run, the same run, over and over again, back and forth. These people are like, well, let's get up there. We'll film it, and then we'll do, like, a recreation. You can tell us what happened. And they had reported their findings, these pilots, and it kind of caught the attention. That's why these reporters were on there just a few days later. Now, remember, this was UFO fever down there. These weren't ufologists. They were just local news people that were covering the story. Then for many minutes during this flight to Christchurch, unidentified lights were observed by five people on the flight deck, and they were tracked by Wellington air traffic controllers and filmed in, wait for it, color by the television crew. What are the fucking chances, man?
What are the chances?
You know, for real, though, that they would, let's go for this and just do a recreation. Nope, there it is.
Wow. And for those of you at home, you have to take a moment to appreciate this. Brent has written the word color in italicized, colorful, Roy G. Biv Technicolor right on the page here, right on the notes. It is literally in color.
When you make bullet points, you got to make sure that they stand out. Color! I thought it was funny. The reason I put in color is everywhere I look, they'd always say, they filmed it in color. And half of them are from over there, so it says color. We filmed in color. But anyway, yeah. Not to mention, one object also, getting back to it, reportedly followed the aircraft until almost landing. And they landed, they drop off their papers. Cargo plane took back off again. Television crew still on. One of the members got off, another member got on, but otherwise it was the same. And when the aircraft reached about 2,000 feet, boom, it encountered what appeared to be a light orb, very large.
Not a jelly-like blob.
No, sorry, once again, no jelly blobs. But this orb was right off the wing of the plane and tracked along with it for about 15 minutes while being filmed. Watched, tracked on radar, all that stuff. Recordings from the film crew, they're talking. You can hear them talking about what's going on. You can hear the pilots. And then a wave of sightings followed the initial report, and the Air Force Skyhawk, there was one of those put up on standby to investigate any possible sightings. That is an impressive note here. They perceived it as a possible threat, I would say, if the Air Force is scrambling planes. But since then, these orbs have appeared intermittently since initial date up until just a few years ago. They're still seen sporadically. That's kind of the meat and potatoes of it here. It's a hell of an event with a lot of proof, or at least, well, there's proof something happened. Yeah, yeah. What could it have been? Was it investigated, and should we worry? Probably. That's all.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's all after this break on the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular.
Stop it.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long term, and it's something that it works. you know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now, right now. Get now. Started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rashate, you're 50% off. Rashate. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. All right. Let's investigate this batch.
Break it down.
In a report submitted to the United Nations in January 1979, this is less than a month later, the Department of Scientific and Industrial Research classified the objects as UFOs until identified.
Yes. You know, we don't know what that is, so it's unidentified. That's just funny to me. It's a UFO until we know what it is, and then it stays a UFO. What? That's not how that works.
Classified by the Department of Redundancy Department.
It's a UFO. Oh, my God, a UFO. I'm the UFO.
It's a UFO I can't identify. Ah! The prospect of extraterrestrial intervention being proved is regarded as extremely remote. So we have that quote because it's one of a large group of declassified documents regarding unidentified flying objects.
Mm-hmm.
At Archives New Zealand, New Zealand's only archive service.
Archives New Zealand. Servicing New Zealand, Cal State Fullerton, and parts of Yorba Linda.
Come see our Nixon files. Which came from New Zealand's post at the UN between 1977 and 1982.
Mm-hmm.
They have all been declassified and released to the public. So, you know, win for New Zealand, win for ufology. It's not every day you get reports like this with aircraft crew, radar people, film footage, all saying there was something there.
Yeah, this has got some pedigree to it, some
credibility.
Credibility, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Now, don't let that you know, stop you from the naysayers saying, I don't believe you or they're all on drugs, but, you know, which is really
they all smoke doobies and then saw flashing lights.
You're all on dope. Calm down, Mr. Hand.
You kids are just on that devil's lettuce. So, you know, that all that stuff makes us stand out from a lot of other reports throughout the years. In investigating all the turned over info, the DSIR, or the Department of Redundancy Department, was able to debunk one piece of the film of the event, but they couldn't do the same with the TV1's footage.
Yeah, yeah.
So they did say that atmospheric conditions could explain false radar readings at the time of the sightings, where both Christchurch and Wellington air traffic control registered signals and said the readings weren't consistent with the sightings of pilots or ground sightings.
Yeah, yeah. Here, hit them with a quote from them.
Let's see, let's try a very bad New Zealand accent, shall we? DSIR not willing to make definite statements yet, but their conjecture is that the objects filmed will turn out to be no more than general illumination, possibly produced by Jupiter or Venus on the horizon. The objects remained classified as UFOs until identified. Prospect of extraterrestrial intervention being proved is regarded as extremely remote.
You don't say. It was me.
Sorry, I apologize to all of our New Zealand friends. Right?
That's a lot better than so mine. Terrible. Or worse. Oh, it's extremely remote. Just like us down here in New Zealand.
Yeah. From Christchurch and maybe Dunedin, Milford Sound, Greymouth, all the hot spots.
I didn't know you were such a linguist. Awesome. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, this info was collected because after the sightings, the Royal New Zealand Air Force, the local police, the Carter Observatory in Wellington, they all cooperated in an investigation.
Cooperation in a UFO matter?
Oof.
Say it ain't so.
That's the fucking thing, is what makes this stand out is people came forward and other people said, well, let's try to get to a scientific understanding of what was going on. I'm sure until the CIA got involved, they're like, you said nothing. Sorry, sir. Sorry, sir. Yeah. Yeah. And then, like we said, the result was recorded in the National Archives in Wellington, and those have been released. And guess what?
What?
New Zealand minister, that would be Ministry of Defense, attributed the sightings to lights from squid boats reflected off clouds, unburnt meteors, or lights from the planet Venus. Or trains and cars.
Just swamp gas. Nothing to see here. Move your cheese muffins along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something here. Now, did you say that these lights were observed repeatedly?
Not only were they seen multiple times, then they've been seen through the years. And they were moving around, seemed to be under intelligent control. It wasn't like, look over there, there's a light. What is that? It was, look over there, there's that light. It's coming towards us. It's pacing us. Little things are dropping out of it. Now it's on the other side. It blinked and moved and came back up and things like that.
So
swamp gas, squid gas, squid.
Yeah.
Squid boats, squid gas. It's that damn squid gas. Blah, blah. I don't know why squid gas sounds like that, but.
Squid gas. Unburnt. Meteors. That's a hell of an excuse.
Didn't you used to be a roadie for unburnt meteors?
I don't like to talk about it, but yeah, I had a lot of good memories and
right?
Had to take a lot of tests while I was doing that. I was the panty sweeper for the stage of unburnt meteors.
I got a 34B. I'll take it.
I'm sorry. It works once, guys. If there was one sighting, those excuses might you know,
right,
hold a little bit of water. If it's going on for years, decades, even, fuck off with that.
Yep. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So declassified documents with the CIA taken after the dispatch of a Lockheed P-3 Orion to the area. Because I told you, you know the CIA is getting involved. They went after the sightings, stated that the sightings were unique among civilian UFO reports because there was a large amount of documentary evidence, which includes recollections of several witnesses, two tape recordings made during the sightings, the detection of unusual ground and airplane radar targets, and all that 16mm color film that they took. All this means to me, and I'll take this or leave it because who am I, but all this means to me is that if there was something out there and if it was moving intelligently, it wasn't Venus. But what do I know? In fact, December 2010, the New Zealand military released a classified report on the incident under the Freedom of Information Act, which concludes the same thing as the CIA. That's a lot of crap saying they don't know what it was. What do the people involved say? Let's find out. They're still alive, all the people, and they have had a lot of crap because of this in their lives. We're going to hear from them all these years later. That's coming up on the Stafford William Mortimer Murgatroyd Spectacular.
From the mouths of babes, or at least those who experienced all this.
Right.
Was it a UFO?
No.
Said
the skeptics.
No, I mean, that's what the man said.
Yeah.
Said it was Venus. Said it was squid boats. It was radar returns from a field of fucking cabbages.
That's literally something. Another one. Bunch of cabbages, yeah.
40-odd years later, the two pilots and four passengers are adamant. It was none of the above shit. And since that is their belief, they are understandably frustrated at being unable to find answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be pissed.
Right.
But pilots Bill Startup and Bob Guard, these last names, man.
Startup Guard, starting guard for the New Zealand UFOs, Bill Bob.
They were on a newspaper run for the flight. Freelance cameraman David. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I know. I know.
David Crockett.
Yep.
And his wife, the bar. Sorry, that's. No, he killed the bar when he was only three. His wife, Inger.
It's Nairi, actually, you schlubs.
Who operated the audio tape recorder, along with reporter Quentin Fogarty. I love this. I love every single person on here. I'm going to dance at all their weddings. And later, Dennis Grant, who is the least interesting.
He's the odd man out of the weird bunch.
Poor Dennis. They were all along to try and film a recreation when the damn thing showed back up, like we said.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Shortly, and this is their version, right?
Yeah.
Shortly after takeoff, the pilots say they notice strange lights appearing and disappearing over the Kaikoura coastline about 20 miles west of the aircraft. Oh, Brent, give us a Davy Crockett quote here.
I don't know. What does Davy Crockett sound like? I'm blanking.
Oh, he's from Tennessee, so if that helps.
Crikey! No. He's like, while we was filming a stand-up to camera. No, I can't do it that way. While we were filming a stand-up to camera, whatever that means, Captain Bill Startup shouted to us that we should go to the flight deck immediately as something was happening again. That sounds nothing like a man from Tennessee. That's just me talking. He managed to film a rapidly moving bright white light. It's hard to make out, and it moves all over the place because the plane's bumpy, and the thing is moving. It kind of looks like... you know, there's like a light orb out there moving around. You know, nothing too crazy.
Yeah. His wife says, with the conversation coming through my headphones from the pilots and radar from Wellington, it all started to get very scary.
Yeah, well, understandably so, because they're like, it's coming right for you. You know, but in a in a more New Zealand accent.
She goes on to say, I was able to stand up a couple of times and was able to see these bright lights coming and going. Quentin was a real mess and grabbed hold of both my hands and started shaking. I didn't have time to worry about myself. I had to help him. So that's noble. Then the plane landed at Christchurch to unload these newspapers, and the pilots asked the news team if they wanted to go back through the area they had traversed. She was too frightened, so she stayed in Christchurch.
Yeah.
But the others reboarded the plane with good old Dennis Grant in Inger's place, like badasses. And he had come to supply extra film for him and jumped in.
Yeah.
She was never heard from again.
No,
all right. Get off that. She's fine.
Yeah.
So they unloaded their stuff. The plane took off again at 2:16 a.m. in the morning. And boom, about 3 minutes after takeoff, 3 minutes.
They are not this fucking, is, yeah, like 2,000 feet, they said. As soon as they climbed like 2,000 feet, it's like, hey, the adventure begins again. Here I am.
Yeah, they saw a bright round light to the right.
Yeah.
I'll real quick point out.
It was crescent shaped, and I see it almost every night now. Sometimes it's bigger. Sometimes, no, I don't know.
Sometimes it's just a big dish.
Yeah.
I'll point out to you guys, for those of you who are following along with your maps, Kaikoura is just about dead middle of the ways between Wellington and Christchurch. Christchurch is southwest of Kaikoura, and 3 minutes after takeoff, you would barely have left Christchurch by that time. That's way away from where it was initially sighted.
Yeah, and this is probably like a turboprop. These aren't gigantic planes. They're not flying at super fast speeds.
That's a good point. So radar on the airplanes showed a target in the same direction about 18 nautical miles. And Fogarty can be heard saying on camera, let's hope they're friendly.
Fingers crossed.
Bitch. You better hope.
Cross your tentacles, yeah.
Davy Crockett filmed the light for several minutes as it appeared to travel along with the plane. And when the plane moved, the light moved with it, reacting to their changes in course. I'm not going to be an asshole and say that was just a reflection from a light on the inside on the window.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
It's moving with us. Oh, when I take this light out of here, it disappears. It's got to be something to do with that. They react.
Just like that bastard in my bathroom on the wall. He's mocking me. Anyway.
No, sad excuse. But Fogarty says, just being on the cramped, noisy flight deck of the Argosy barreling down the coast in the dead of night was exciting. Factor in a row of pulsating, hypnotic lights hovering outside the window, and I just jizzed my pants. No, he says it goes to another level, but you know what I mean. What do you think, Brent? 3 a.m.? That's squid boating time?
Yeah, you know.
Is that proper squid boat?
It's prime. Well, the cabbages are dormant, so, you know, it had to be squid boats. Yeah, at
that
3 a.m.
makes sense.
Yeah.
After they landed at Woodbourne Airport at about 3 a.m., the group stayed at the two pilots' home in Blenheim.
Yeah.
Blenheim. Let me see. What is it? Woodbourne? Blenheim. Yeah, Blenheim. I keep calling Blenheim. Oh, that's okay. So where they landed is north of Kaikoura and just like west southwest of Wellington, almost near the north, right on the northeastern coast.
Yeah.
Near Picton, which is where the ferry goes over from Wellington. So that is that's a ways away from Kaikoura and certainly Christchurch. Just trying to,
because it's such a remote area. They're flying the newspapers for a reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So Startup, Captain Startup, whatever his name is, his daughter Tracy Moore remembers her father coming home in the middle of the night. She says everyone was at our house talking about it in the middle of the night. They were talking about lights, unexplained radar. At one point, I remember Dad saying it might be a good idea to report it to the police. It was during the Cold War. There was a bit of paranoia around. Mum said, you can't sit on this information. And she says it was scary at the time. It was a big unknown thing that had happened, and we had all the adults around discussing it. There were certainly no jokes being made.
That's important that, it's at least a testament to their minds at the time, you know, going back over the thing. And they were all so had their adrenaline up that they all went back to one of the pilots' houses and like talked about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fogarty interviewed the pilots before flying to Melbourne to give the recordings to Channel Zero. And this footage featured on Primetime News that night. And then there's a longer documentary piece screened later. That's all it took. And the world found out about this and boom, people blamed, like we said, Venus, drugs, cabbages, all that stuff. You know, and cabbages.
I want to start blaming cabbages for other sightings.
Exactly. The government ordered an inquiry by the Air Force, which concluded that the sightings could have been explained by natural but unusual phenomena, which is something that we call conspiracy bat. Leonard Lee, this cat traveled to U.S. to give the film to Bruce Maccabee, an optical physicist who specialized in laser technology and worked for the U.S. Navy in Maryland, Virginia. He's also had flown to New Zealand and Melbourne to interview witnesses. He concluded the events involved unknown objects or phenomena fitting the definition of UFOs. That's a big feather in the hat. He said, one would think that the conclusion that several of the sightings involved unidentified flying objects flying with impunity in the New Zealand airspace would have been sufficient to start an even deeper study of UFOs, but it wasn't. The sightings were relegated to the dustbin of history, forgotten by all except the witnesses and a few ufologists who discussed the various sightings and events years afterward. That sounds familiar, or at least we were told there's nothing to see here because they either A, already knew what it was, or B, were going to investigate it under the radar, so to speak. Don't you feel like that's kind of the reaction to all that stuff?
For sure. And the more you hear these stories and look at the history of this kind of stuff, the more that people aren't just like, oh my God, yeah, of course. People are now like, yep, that tracks. That's what a government would do. You know, like it does not surprise me at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't anger me really either, I guess, because it's like they're not going to ring all the church bells and be like, everybody fucking hide. The aliens are here.
Right. Yeah. Let's have some decorum or whatever you want to say. And play it off as nothing to see here, you looky-loos. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking with the people on there, Quentin Fogarty said, the level of initial skepticism both surprised and at times overwhelmed me. I certainly did not expect to be accused of hoaxing the whole thing. That cut deep. It still does.
You cut me deep.
You cut deep. The local Daily Tabloid in Melbourne branded me as a UFO reporter, and that stuck for a short time, but did not take long for me to be back on my old role as TV journalist reporting on more mundane matters. Meaning, if you ever bring anything that that makes everyone rocks the boat, so to speak, instead of taking a serious look at it, it's easier to just go, oh, dumb. No.
Oh, sure.
That bothers my sensibilities. You know, and that's how you have to say it. Sensibilities. And and then you got an out.
Yeah. There are plenty of stories out there you can do that with, and I would not feel bad about doing that with. But this one has, like we said, a lot of credibility. There should be evidence to this around, which I haven't asked you about yet because I trust you that you're going to tell us about that later.
Well, I mean, these guys were listed in a lot of the things I looked at as UFO hunters, not reporters. So we had film, our own eyewitness accounts, and confirmation from the flight crew and air traffic controllers that we had stumbled onto something astonishing. 40 years down the track, and this is still unfinished business. Mm. Boom. Bill Startup, pilot Bill, told the documentary that they did this in 2009. What it was all those years ago, I wish I knew. People can think what they want, but they were not in the aircraft. Truth. Bob Gard is a little more guarded now. Hey-oh.
Whoa, whoa.
Yeah. One of the issues for me is we were just doing our job. We suddenly had to justify ourselves. We don't know what the hell it was. We didn't expect to see anything. It was a bit tense as it got closer to the aircraft. I got over it. Have I ever seen anything like that again? No, I haven't. Do I believe in UFOs? No, I don't. Pilots see a lot of unidentified flying objects. Would I tell anyone if I saw anything like that again? No, I wouldn't. It's not worth the hassle. Have you seen anything like that since? No. Would you tell me if you had? No.
That is such a practical answer, I feel like.
Then you got Nagare.
That is someone who is tired of that shit.
Yeah, just like, I don't want, you know what? I'm out. Doing the whole dealer hand thing, you know? Just Nagare, who divorced it's David Kraken not long after the event, said that when asked if the documentaries and reports had changed her life, she said, I guess it did. We had phone call after phone call and people knocking on the door. David, the reporter, became so obsessed with the documentary they were doing. It was all they talked about. I switched off as we had 5 children and it was affecting our lives so much that they got divorced because of it. David, on the other hand, said, to this very day, the incident has never left my mind. I'm also reminded of the event by people who come up to me and say, saw you the other night on the Discovery or Science Channel. The effect this historic sighting has had on all of us has certainly included a fair amount of stress. As for me, I was sleepless for several nights, and after having performed several overseas lectures on this sighting, became quite depressed. And they said that lasts a long time. It substantially changed my life. At the time in the history of the UFO phenomenon, skeptics thought we were crazy and criticized us in many ways. In 1978, most persons would not seriously consider that these are real objects and may even originate from other planets. And then finally, Dennis Grant was he got on when Nagare got off. So he was on there for the second leg of this. He actually spent a lot of time collecting research to figure out what had really happened that night. He's the youngest. He's only 66 now. So he was like, you know, 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The results are overwhelmingly unhelpful in explaining the lights and what they were doing in the lonely summer skies in New Zealand. 40 years on, I'm still very curious. My grandkids love to hear the story of my brush with UFOs. I just wish I could provide an ending. I was a young journalist back then, fired with zeal of telling stories untold, and I helped tell this story. But the rest of the world, the scientists, the officials, the military, and status is all for me, the media, were all consumed with indifference and curious.
That's one of the things that people hear about, and they just, I don't think we can understand without going through how much it affects people's lives to come forward with this. If it's not just assholes who are closed-minded and think they know best harassing them, it's people who believe it's the opposite. It would be people who really take this seriously, mm-hmm. believe it, want everything, every piece of information they can. They that's just well, it may not be quite as harassing as the people who are making fun of them, of course, right. But it's a level of harassment that people shouldn't have to deal with. And then there's the media.
Yeah, you never want to have to be in a position where you're like, please believe me, you know?
Yeah.
And when you're really telling the truth and, like, you know, even people you know are just like, I've had things happen, not even like crazy shit, and be like, people, I don't believe you. I'm like, sure. I'm not a liar. Like, I would understand if you're like, I catch you in lies all the time. That's not me. So then, like, why would you throw shade or doubt? It bugs me. And I'm sure that I unfortunately do it to people too. I am not, you know, playing the martyr here. I'm just saying it is frustrating, and frustrating for everyone.
It is. And it's so, I don't know, just to decide that, you know.
Yeah.
That's what blows my mind, because I'm so open to reviewing evidence and listening to claims and just trying to think in my head, you know, what would make the most logical sense? What's reasonable about this? That,
well, exactly.
I hate being like, no, you're wrong. No, couldn't have happened.
That's impossible. Why there's this, like, podcast I like, whose tagline is, the truth is out there, but you won't find it here.
Who's this? I'm going to have to subscribe and share this.
It's a cafeteria something. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds dumb.
Anyway, so have you guys ever seen lights in the sky, or had anyone? Have you ever had any experience and people said, nah, I don't believe you? I'd love to hear about them. You can tell us by, well, tweet to us at Hysteria51Pod. Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That's a regular page. Or one of the easiest ways is go on Facebook, look up Hysteria Nation. That's our discussion group. Voicemail, 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. Or go on Patreon, patreon.com/Hysteria51. Get this and all other episodes now free. Not free. Ad-free with your experience on there. And you can find all these links on hysteria51.com. While they're going to places, where can they go to find your other shenanigans?
You can look up Blurry Photos episodes. Just search Blurry Photos podcast anywhere. And trivia, quiz, quiz, bang, bang. And
bang, bang.
Yeah, we are still waiting to hear about getting distribution for the film.
Nice.
It's frustrating to wait.
Hey, you got it done. You're just trying to figure out how you can get it to everyone. Yeah, That's pretty cool.
We got to figure out how to get it out to the masses. Yep,
absolutely.
And our Kickstarter backers. So yeah, still waiting, unfortunately, but it's hopefully the wheels
end
are still turning.
The end is in sight. So that's awesome. Well, yeah, kids, let us know. And if you've ever been to New Zealand you want to tell us how much more fun you had there than David, feel free to. With impossible. That said, I've been Brent.
I've been David.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. We'll be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand shine.